catch my mood board. Right. Should we just spin and do this? Because we just
All right, let's do it. Cool. We got whiskeys in hand, right? I haven't poured mine.
And remembering as well, jar of piss.
Yeah, one of these three.
You can tell
one of these three is the piss jar.
did the stickers fall off, Fizz?
Oh, no.
There it is. Okay,
yeah,
good. I'm already giving it away with the bottle. I see.
This is great. Oh, I love Tasmanian whiskey. all right, great. So this is either you're on a really dehydrated day, or I'm in for a treat. Either way,
this guy needs a Barocca. Hey, Fizz, remember, you're going to say "Welcome to Kindred Spirits." I'm Jason Fox. I'll say "I'm John Anthony," and then you'll say some weird shit.
I've got it. Yeah. No worries. Hang on, let me do the pour. Right, I'm going to get this on there.
Good call.
Oh. Mm-mm-mm. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get this glug.
I love that we're doing this a tiny bit too early. Oh,
because I just need it for the turn, right?
Yeah, because I'm going to be holding this in the turn, exactly.
Yeah. All right, shall we?
I'm ready.
Hang on. Am I going first? I'm saying hi.
You're going to say, I'm Jason Fox. All right, now 3, 2, but I won't say the one. You ready, Fizz?
Radio.
3, 2.
Hello, I'm Jason Fox.
And I'm John Anthony.
And you're watching or listening to Kindred Spirits, where career limiting is just the beginning.
You know what I love about this, though? We keep jabbing and suggesting that it's career limiting, but I meant what I was saying the other day. I do feel like it's tribe amassing, and I'm not sure about your experience, Fizzle, but ever since we put this in motion, I can already feel this beautiful groundswell as we continue to sort of galvanize and attract our type of people. What do you make of that, brother?
Yes. I think there's something, this comes back to trickster inversions, right? I remember I did an event series called The Rekindling, where I intentionally said things like, come join the not community for a night. Quite specifically, because when you're kind of too intentional about the thing, you end up kind of corrupting it. But when you kind of do the opposite thing, beautiful things blossom on the other side. It's kind of like that procrastination thing. If you want to do something, you put it in the periphery, and you put the thing you want to do in the periphery, and then you kind of try to do something else. Like, you got to trick yourself into it all. So
it's almost you trick yourself towards it, but you don't want to ruin it with the words.
You don't want to
stamp it by saying what it is. You know what it reminds me of? It's like when people are first falling in love and they say, "Stop trying to put a label on it."
Well, I know the kind of the masculine urge to label, to colonize, to map, to categorize, to make programs of things, to kind of put their stamp on it, to kind of coin terms, to claim things. It's just we're surrounded by it. It is the day and age, but oh well, AI will take it all anyway. So
take it, snatch it, and brand us with it. All this. It's funny, all of these emerging gags that already feel really stale, you know, people saying, be polite to it, or you're going to get lasered because you forgot to say thank you. And now the idea that please and thank yous is wasting money and water. I mean, all of it just feels like this generic echo of garbage. Thoughts, Fizzle?
I mean, it is a mirror. And complaints about slop, I read someone writing about this, it's kind of... The slop is within us. It just kind of echoes and amplifies with it. And
the slop is within me.
There is a thing. I've got to learn to be much more patient and benevolent. I have this kind of inner battle that happens when I hear someone sharing something I've heard 100 times before. I got to try to stop being such an arrogant prick inside, because that happens. And then I feel bad about it, so then I overcompensate by being really enthusiastic about what they're saying, even though I'm like, Yes, really over it already.
Let's be honest, Legend. Surely this is something that you wrestle with forever, because by nature, you're always several steps ahead of everyone. And I don't think that's arrogant, man. I just think that's your nature. And so one of the things that I really enjoyed when we first started to party was I really do get the sense that when you encounter someone, you're deliberately sort of calibrating your frequency so that you can meet them in a fashion that's conducive to harmony and cohesion. You know, it's not your fault that you're a few steps in front, mates.
So there's a couple of things here. Likewise, of course, although you bring a kind of conviviality to things, like I really appreciate that. There's you know, part of the movement is leveling the playing field. So when you got someone who's a bit uppity, you kind of do some benevolent humor at them. And then someone's feeling a little bit quiet and shy, you kind of elevate them. And we're all kind of group hugging and dancing. And that's like wonderful acuity and attunement. My worry, though, and this is what I talked about, that dinner that we had with Michael Bungay, Daniel, Ian Hughes, Steph Clark.
Steph.
For too long, I've been too... my acuity for all this stuff has kind of been too high, and so I'm trying to be as in there's an embodied voice that I'm trying to listen into more, and I think that I do. Like, it's always there. It's this intuitive thing where I'm trying to not be too calculated or strategic, but be more attuned to the emergence and to the energetics, to use that word from the last time. You know.
But you're already there, Fizz, and I suppose that's something that's a great thing to acknowledge, is that the fact that you seem even mildly concerned about it or point it out as a potential flaw, it's already resolved.
Oh, dude,
high acuity for you doesn't equal alienation for others. I think part of
good.
Your magic is your ability to observe things from a dangerously meta perspective, innocently pitch yourself as several rungs in front, but then be able to dilute that in a way that's really relatable. I'll tell you something beautiful. When my wife first listened to our podcast or one of our conversations, she said something really charming. She said something like, look, I've got to be honest, I'm only understanding one of every five things that he says, but I love it all, right? And this isn't unique. I think a lot of people are drawn to you because even though at times not every single message is landing, the frequency that you push it out on is really captivating, mates. It's the way that you're
pushing. Yeah, thanks. This is a living thing for me at the moment for two reasons. I had a conversation with sometimes I do discovery calls when the client's not really sure what they want, and we just get on and talk about things. And they were saying that their boss had listened to one of my podcast episodes.
Yes.
And they're like, this guy's good, but I'm just worried that he won't be clear come the day, because we'll have a lot of executives in the room. And I was like, oh, no, that's a very different context, like a podcast, right? But then I was in this whole thing of, shit, there's potential clients listening to this stuff. And then I was like aware of that potential gaze. And then there was this part of me that wanted to just hold off, like, I know I need to kind of create these havens where we can just relax and hang as friends, and this is not a sales thing. It's not like, so that's alive in me. But then also the last, I did this podcast about the social media landscape and so on, and I shared my thoughts and concerns. And then I've since come to worry that maybe I've been a little bit inadvertently elitist, and, you know, there's a lot of free tools out there that people can use and get onto. And then I go into this when I'm tired, right? When I haven't slept well, and you've got a much better excuse than I have, but when I'm tired, I get into this kind of insecurity thing. Like I'll write this 5,000 word essay, and then people kind of like, that's good. And then one person's like, you didn't talk about this. And that's the thing that I'll fixate on. And I know you've got like a little video talking about this, like this, it still gets me, you know?
But you know that as well as I do. That's the way your brain's wired, Legend. Looking for the bad stuff, repeating it to you, ignoring it. One of my favorites, this guy, Rick Hansen, he said, positive emotions slide off like Teflon, negative emotions grip like Velcro. And so even the smartest among us like yourself, you're still going to do it. You're still going to pay attention to that one piece of shade in a field of sunshine. It's just the way you're wired, Legend.
I think there's also something I really, you know, there's a really popular saying, strong opinions lightly held. And I'm a big fan of weak opinions strongly held.
Opinions viscerally gripped onto. What do you think this?
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like,
no, I don't like that. Weak opinions, white knuckled. That's what.
Well, it's that the holding's not like a grip. It's kind of like, there's a deep kind of, like, individual examples and stuff like that. Whatever. Mm. But there's like a there's quite a. It's nebulous still and networked and so on. I'm gonna sneak that word in every time, right? But. You know, okay, first of all, what's my issue with strong opinions is that they often kind of are so brash, people get on the defensive, it's all like the stakes are raised, but like a kind of a weak opinion strongly held is like, there's like a firm belief set behind this. Not that I'm calcified with the beliefs, but like there's something behind this, but it's offered in a kind of a more gentle opinions. Family held.
So are you enjoying that by its nature it represents a paradigm shift, a polarizing perspective, a point of contention? Are you welcoming that the sort of
I don't like that about the strong opinions, the polarizing thing. The weak ones. It's like you get to idle up to things and just like plant the seeds and because I was at a conference once facilitating a panel, and one dude was like saying to someone else, it's like, I'm gonna call bullshit on that. And it's just this kind of, it's a mic drop thing, but it just this beautiful kind of gentle emergent space was just like stomped on by this guy.
You know,
and the point that he had to share wasn't a good one anyway.
Yeah, you've just called bullshit on something that was quite nice. You know, it's funny, Fizz, I had another one just the other day that stung me. And it stung because I hadn't heard it for ages. And it also occurred to me that I'd never throw it at someone. I offered up this idea that I was quite proud of. And this guy said to me, listen, John, I understand what you're trying to say.
Jesus. Yeah.
This is just such violent language, isn't it? Well, one of my best mates, you know, I'll say something and he always replies with, yes, but beyond that, right? And then he offers up his thing. So I've heard yours, but now here's mine, far, far above beyond.
I love that.
It's another great example of words being like spells, isn't it? So dangerous.
Yeah. Dang, oh, very. Yeah, definitely. Hence why we need to be hesitant about naming living, emergent, complex, dynamic phenomena, lest we kind of kill the very thing that gives us its energy.
And, you know, it's a nice circle back, isn't it? Because that's exactly why this right now will never have an agenda. You know, I was talking to Leanne about it today, and I said one of the reasons why we're so amused by kindred spirits is we don't know what it is. Even as we went to push the first ep, you and I are saying, what are we going to say that it is? I don't know. Ask the Kraken. and even then, whatever the Kraken threw up was an attempt. But I love that. And how could you and I be poster boys for emergence, but then have a rigid agenda for a podcast?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. There's like a bit of jazz. We've got our turn at the start. We know we're going to be having a whiskey at some point. That's enough.
It occurred to me the turn. This isn't only a visual medium. It occurred to me, even though I'm pushing the turn, it opens with an awkward gap of silence as we get the more swivel spin in our chairs.
That's true. I'll have the music fade maybe into that silence this time. Maybe one day we can do a rise or something, or just start walking up the.
I've just remembered that the very first thing that is part of our very loose format is for me to ask you, my friend, what is on your mind?
I had something. I knew you would ask. What was it? Oh, God. Here's the thing. So myself and many others in the world, they look at you. You're like one of your videos, I think you did it at an airport, just popped up, and you've got this, there's an alacrity to you. Like, you can actually, I feel lifted by watching it. And I guess the question, what's on my mind is, what I'm struggling with at the moment is, I don't, it's been, how do I even say this?
The creative
part of things, like there's creative projects that I want to do. There's this like medieval sampler that I got, right? So good. Haven't had time to get to
the camera legend, because I know some people.
Hang on. Let's see if I can get the demo set up. All right. So here we go. Oh, my depth of field's there. So let's go. Anyway, I've got this. I haven't had time to learn how to use it, right? And I had these thoughts about like doing this cool podcast intro, and I want to write a choose your own adventure novel and like make a game and all these things. And I'm just like, I look at you and you've got these beautiful side projects. You've got your singer-songwriter stuff. You're making creative videos. You're having a great time. And I, like, so what's on my mind is, I'm trying to, like, I've been like wandering the dark forest as some sort of like brooding forest hipster wizard druid, like for too long. Like I imbibed too much Metacrisis stuff, too much Cassandering, too much concern about where we're going in the world. All of it legitimate, but I'm actually so tired of the role, and I'm just wondering if someone were to come, like asking for a friend, if someone was to come with you, to you, like, you know, hey man, you've got energy. And they're like,
shots fired.
How, like, I'm looking for good, like, I'm seeking the kind of lifeline back to more verdant fields with flowers and rainbows and blossoms and creativity, instead of the, you know, the sump lands that I can find myself in, which has nice peat, you know, but it's a bit of a quagmire at times.
He's wallowing in the penumbra.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of what's on my mind. I haven't articulated that well, but I figure as a friend, you'd have a sense of like ways that
it's great. You know, it's an awesome question. And you know what? It brings me back to something we spoke about just last week, which is that awareness piece. You're already past halfway because you've become aware of it. What you're aware of, you're in control of. The one thing I'll say, Legend, is you're a very creative person, and a mistake that can be made is you get stuck on an avenue towards it. So if you're saying to yourself, I'm going to be creative, and to do that, I have to master this loot machine that I've purchased, or I have to write this choose your own adventure. I often find those things, for me, they present as dead ends. So I'm surrounded by technology here. You know, I've got the SPDSX, I've got a sequencer here, I've got my guitar, I've got my all these different brass and stuff on the ground. But when I decide that I'm in a creative mood, I deliberately have no idea about what's going to come. And I often talk about this because I started writing songs when I was 19, and I've learned that forcing anything guarantees it's going to be a piece of shit. You know, it just has to fall out of you, which means, Legends, you've got to find a way to create the conditions. And so I don't know what that looks and feels like for someone as busy as you. I know that you're writing a book and you're pimping your website, and you're so incredibly busy and very mobile. So how do you create the conditions that lend themselves to you to behaving in a way that's likely to be more creative? You've got to time swap some shit out. Where are you putting your energy at the moment that you're not happy with when you're doing audits?
Yeah, it's this is wondrous, you know, irony of expertise kind of thing, right? Of course, creating the conditions. I love that point about it can't be forced, right? And there are times that I've like I don't understand how people can put out content like every, you know, maybe it's a good discipline and they kind of force themselves to come up with something and you know, get chatty to spit it out if they can't rise to the occasion. But I can't force it. And there are times that I felt like I really need to do a podcast, and I've recorded it and I've like listened to it, and it's like, this isn't right. The energy is not there.
Yeah.
So
I've done the same thing, Legend, so many times. I've lost count now of how many times I will sort of look at the calendar. I'll be busy and think, hey, you know what? It's been 8 days since I've uploaded a piece of content. Make something, and it is a steaming piece of shit. Which is why when you say to me, "Oh, JA, that thing you did recently at the airport. You know, I can't quite remember what it was, but I know that it was okay because it was real, man. I was walking, it hit me.
Yeah.
I thought there were lots of people around me, and I thought, I don't care. There's something that I feel like I need to say. And this is something you and I spoke about offline. It was about the timing of it too. I felt like this is the time that I need to say this. And so you upload and you get rid of your logo and your soundtrack and your bullshit, and you just punch out laser beam essence, you know, in the seat of honesty. And I think that's why some content resonates harder than others, is because you've lopped it out on a really genuine and gentle frequency. When it's manufactured, it's far more likely to be a shit show, isn't it?
I think sometimes I yearn for a world where we live in more of an oral culture, and so the internet's not preserving our stuff forever, but like people hear a review and stuff, and it's just this kind of like, you're the bard and you go across to the different taverns, and you know, yes, that would be wonderful. I've got this thing where there's this video that I made with a whiteboard about 12 years ago, and people still look at it and see it and love it. I guess I should just roll with that, but I kind of get caught up in the cringe of the younger version of myself that didn't know what I know now. And, you know, maybe there's our friend Sarah Firth who commented today.
Oh, Sarah, yes, I saw her. Yeah.
Shout out to Sarah. Was say something like, kill the cringe. No, don't kill the cringe, kill the part of you that cringes, or something like that. There's something about integrating cringe.
I agree, mate. And
any thoughts?
Well, many times I've considered deleting some of my earlier work on Spotify because I know without question that my music just keeps getting better. And it's not because I keep getting better, it's because I keep surrounding myself with geniuses. You know, like I'm working with producers that are just so infinitely more talented than me that I'll bring them a little piece of coal and they will crush it into a diamond. I know that the output is ramping because of by association. And so sometimes I'll go back and I'll listen to recordings that I made that are still on Spotify with just me and my guitar, and I think, well, that just sounds like a rat pissing on tin. But I am reluctant to delete it because it was still a moment in time. It represented where I was with my art then. It showed how loose I used to be on the guitar, you know, how arguably better my voice might have been when I was a little bit younger. There are things about it that present as a time capsule. And, you know, I like that idea that Firth is giving, because there's nothing wrong with shedding parts of you that you no longer feel connected to, but it doesn't make them any less real because they existed in the past. What do you think, brother?
I think there's a thing where because your music is an authentic share at the time, it can stand the test of time. And I think this is a thing, you keep coming back to authenticity, like, are we engaging this with, like, you know, right relation, good heart, good humor, good humility. I went through this camp, like this flurry of deleting much of my past work. Like I don't know what came across me, but there is part of me that felt like I was writing to sound impressive to the market. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And it worked, and it was great, and you know, it's got me, you know. But at the same time, there was part of me that recognized that I wasn't being as I don't know. This is the thing that's active for me at the moment. Like, how mercenary do we go? How pragmatic? Because it would be wonderful to be ideal.
You know,
like,
this has brought me to something that I'm glad you've evoked out of me. Anytime anyone uploads anything onto any of these platforms, and, you know, I'm loving some of your recent banter around them and how soulless they are, but a difficult question that I've always really struggled to answer is, anytime you make a piece of content and push it out into the ether, who are you talking to? Who are you talking to? And this is where it becomes an issue, isn't it? Because if you've done it in the past with a commercial lens and you're rousing that character that is Jason Fox, and at one point you are literally lapping the globe doing keynote speeches with clients like Porsche, you're a rock star. You did that. You're a self-perpetuating wave of your own brilliance. You did that, Fizzle, right? But it's a difficult thing to answer, and I don't have it. When you upload anything anywhere, who are you talking to? And I often don't know. And that's why I suggested to you last week that when I'm really vulnerable about it, and I go back, particularly if I go back and I see stuff that I've been bapping about in the past, I realize that quite often, through a glass darkly, I'm talking to myself. I'm talking to me.
Yeah, you know, and this is my other worry, right? Is that this kind of solipsistic talking or writing for myself as a primary audience. This is what Rick Rubin says in, what is it, The Creative Act? Is like...
Yeah, man. I'm really enjoying this conversation. Please give me your thoughts on this Rick Rubin.
Well, in a moment, I am... But there's a thing where I'm like, am I just like veering into indulgence here? Like, yes, because I went through this phase of, I had a podcast like a while ago, a lot of interviews, but I feel like I was too authentic in that I was sharing the doubt and the vulnerabilities that I was having that were very real for me at the time. And it really kind of sapped the perceived authority that I would have. And to me, I feel like someone doing that is actually a greater strength than someone kind of wearing the kind of clear, confident, conviction, persona. But that's also not how the market largely sees it. And so I kind of had this kind of vulnerability hangover after each episode, this the residual perpetual cringe, and I just like deleted it. But then at the same time, I don't want to be... there's this kind of, it's a weird dynamic, like authenticity and like warm but humble authority, like how we manifest, and it comes back to service, I know, but yeah, this is a...
And I think that's exactly the glitch, because again, we don't know, and I'm talking about us as a collective, but I think quite often we aren't really clear on who it is that we're talking to. Who are you talking to? You know, this whole idea about all of us are just the consciousness experiencing ourselves, you know, the Rick Rubin.
Subjectively.
the Rick Rubin.
There's no such thing as death, and we're just a dream imagining ourselves.
It's always my attention because, you know, I've read the book and I understand where he's coming from, and there's something pure and noble about it, but... If you are creating art only for you, like if it really is only for you, then why did you release it and why did you show it to somebody? Okay, you know,
that's a nice take.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? So I just wrapped up. You know about this, and I was telling Michael Dixon about this. You know, I just literally dropped this album with my band. And the day we released the album, the band broke up, okay? It was one of the most heartbreaking creative experiences that I had in about 5 or 6 years. Mm. But one of the weird things about this project was that the keyboard player had no interest in playing any of the songs live. And I remember saying to him as we'd record them, I'd say, but this is like, to me, this is like doing a painting, and the second you add the last stroke to the painting, you go and lock it under the stairs. You know what I'm saying? Dorian Gray styles. Like, you lock it up, and no one ever looks at it. And he said to me, yeah, but John, you're a performer. You know, you're making music so that you can play the music, whereas for me, just making it is enough. You know, and this is interesting, isn't it? Because this is two very different approaches to creativity. And I don't, you know, I feel like I'm starting to psychoanalyze myself, but I can confidently say to you, Jace, that I make the art because it's in my soul, but of course I'm making it because I want to play it. Of course I'm trying to reach people. I'm trying to impact. I'm trying to move. I'm trying to push something out of me, and there's a ripple that I'm trying to spread towards the idea of influence. That's the point. That's the point. And so if that's true, then is it a bit naive to not try to think, well, is this commercially sexy? Does that sound good? Will other people like it? Is that such a silly thought to hold in your mind when you're clear on some of the reasons why you're doing it?
I think it makes sense. It makes sense. I mean, I think there's this Hegelian synthesis betwixt, you know, Rick Rubin's thesis and what you're suggesting here. Like, there is a sense of, you know, you got to please yourself first. Like, if you're not happy with it, then obviously that's not going anywhere. But also, as you're doing this, so what's coming to me at the moment is there's this beautiful philosopher and author, Bill Plotkin, who wrote a book called Soulcraft and The Wild Mind and The Journey of Soul Initiation. Okay. And he would suggest that we are all ecological expressions. And part of what we're doing is, you know, we're the only species who can spend their whole lives having never found their ecological niche. And I think there's this thing of soul work, of trying to move towards that, and some people might call it dharma, they might call it, like, you know, a synchronicity, resonance, and so on, trying to like live into the poem we are born to be, if that makes sense.
I like that a lot.
And that there is a, this is new territory for me, because I was a little too deep in the kind of science and rational world, and then complexity opened the doors to meta-rationality, and then all the other worlds of being and knowing and relating. There's this thing of like trying to attune to what is the, am I moving closer to the ecological niche? And the ecological niche is where you are, you know, a contributing part of a greater whole, and it's just energizing and effortless at the same time, because we're in our niche. You know what I mean?
I do, mate. And you know what? I think in my heart, you've just come full circle, because when you suggest that we are living towards synchronicity, this beautiful idea, and I won't say it as well as you did, but this idea that we're trying to be or embody the poem that we were born to be, I honestly feel that the path towards that is exactly what you were talking about 10 or 15 minutes ago when you said, I feel that I'm being too vulnerable on these podcasts. I feel like I'm dropping the facade. I feel like I'm showing up in a way that's too authentic. That's you. That's you on the journey, man. That's you. Mm. Think about it. If you're trying to live towards synchronicity, there's so much out there to suggest that people closest to doing that are the ones whose mind and actions are in rhythm. It's that whole as above, so below thing, isn't it, Fizz? And it's so much easier said than done, but what an amazing idea to move towards a place where your heart and your mind and your behavior are in alignment. Why can't we keep trying, mate?
There's a, yeah, it's like stumbling forward, and there's like cycles and loops and spirals and rhythms, and the kind of quest towards coherence and congruence. And there's a particular thing, like I've been usually okay with that in a smaller arc. I was actually chatting with Michael Dixon the other day. We're reflecting on how, and we're all of a similar age, there's this in-betwixt mode of the adolescent self who, I'll just speak for myself, flamboyant on stage, character, whimsy, and all this stuff. And I don't know what the adult version is yet, the kind of more statesman or the wise fly. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm kind of in this in-between stage, and it's this, you know, the liminality is a little tricky to kind of track, because nothing seems to stick. It's like, and then of course, you know, on the internet and the market wants to commodify you and brand you and have you be a thing and have one or two words associated with you, and that's your thing and that's what you do, and you've got these templated programs and here's your six-step blah, and yeah, I find that those forces are kind of, they cripple the unfurling.
They do. They cripple the unfurling as they tattoo you into a place that makes you easier to talk about behind your back. And what does that mean? Easier to sell, easier for someone to push your proposal up the chain, or whatever the hell the agenda is. I don't like it, man. And you know what? Maybe that makes us naive and silly, but aren't we deliberately nebulous by
this? Well, that's the message we preach. So, you know, at least listeners will know we're living it too.
I'll never forget this. This is a slight sidestep, but I'll never forget going for a meeting with a client. I won't name them, but let's say they sell a lot of groceries to people, okay? And I was out there, and I met a couple of really senior people, and I seemed to think that the meeting went well, but then I got feedback from someone really senior in HR, and they said, look, John, they like you, but they're worried if they bring you on that you're not going to be able to do it seriously, right? And I remember saying to them, hey, that's a really valid concern, and maybe you should look for someone else, you know? And
that's great. Good.
It's funny, good, isn't it? I mean, I don't know, but it's a thing that I comfortably embrace. If you're offended by frivolity, you know, and nonsense, if you don't like the tricks to disposition, you know, if letting a jester through the gates to poke at some shit unnerves you, then don't bring people like you and I in, because it's not going to go well.
Stay fragile. Because it's the kind of the rulers who allow the jester in court. It's a kind of a sign of strength, like I'm going to quote James Cars here, Finite and Infinite Games.
Oh, I've been wondering how long it's till we bring this legend up.
To be serious is to press for a specific outcome, but to be playful is to be open to possibility, then no matter the cost to oneself.
So beautiful.
And you know, if you have someone who has a specific outcome in mind and they're organizing an event and it's really just theater because they already know the outcomes that they want to get and it's just going through the motions to get to the thing, then yeah, I'm sure there's some straight-laced dour, you know, 1+1=2 speakers out there that will service that role, you know. But if you're in a situation where you're like, you know what, our world is changing. I don't know if our people are you know, quite enlivened to the opportunities at hand, and maybe we've become habituated with a few structures that could do with some a bit of a shake-up in a benevolent way. Why don't we bring JA in?
You'll love this. Just last week, someone said to me, I sent a proposal somewhere, it doesn't matter, and they said, hey, look, John, my boss likes it, but they want you to send us what it is that you're going to do. Right? And I came straight back and I said, but I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I can't show you what I'm going to do because they are going to do it. I mean, isn't this just a fantastic glitch? Because there's an enormous leap of faith. You know, I said, you've got to understand there is no content to share because the content will be designed by them, for them.
Oh, clients love that.
You know,
they love hearing that.
And it's a gamble, isn't it? It's a gamble because they have to go back to their boss and say, JA said that there's nothing, right?
No, we're going to do nothing. It's like it's something we're going to actively do.
How do you do that? How do you explain to people that you can't tell them what you're going to do until you get?
I have a swag of fancy terms. Like, we're going to create the conditions for generative ambiguity here because we don't want to prematurely collapse the possibility space and have people fixate upon, you know, narrow visions that are too safe, comfortable, predictable, or familiar. And so what that will mean is we're going to have to intentionally, you know, do some subtle disruptions, agitate and try to energize and integrate peripheral perspectives into some sort of synthesis that alchemizes and brings out things that could never have been possible without this event.
Where do I sign?
And then there's always like the downward comparisons. It's like, and I get that. Like, this requires some courage to do because it's not your cookie cutter thing. And if, of course, there's always plenty of other options if you just want to go through the motions, but you're probably going to be in the same situation this time next year than you were if you're looking to actually, like, the same thinking that brought us here cannot be used to bring us to where we need to go, etc.
One thing I will say, I don't think they're in the same situation. I think they're in a worse situation because some Muppet came in and rattled the cage and pissed people off. So now they're even more disenchanted than before the attempt. So I don't think they're in the same place. I think they're worse when they bungle it.
There's also a phenomena, and I have to be careful here because I like career executives. many of my clients are career executives where they actually go into an organization, they do magic work because they've got the fresh perspective, they've got the charisma, the influence, the authority, they rally the things, they get the thing done. And then they get bored, and so they go off to another thing. And then, you know, I'm their kind of lever to help to catalyze, and, you know, this is wonderful. But there are some that will come in, and they will achieve the goal, but they leave such a mess and such harm and such, like, damage in their wake that then they have to get another person to go and fix that.
Oh, wow.
But then if that person's doing the same thing, then another person needs to come in and fix it. And then we're just kind of creating this pantomime of busy work.
It's a pantomime of busy work. At least you were in the first phrase.
That's right.
You were the overture, Jason.
I want to tell you a little quip. I had this guy on, an executive on, before I was on at, I was speaking at a bank, and he was talking about his previous role working for, also for one of the major grocers here.
Yes.
He was a CTO. He was actually in charge of realizing that we were losing a lot of funds because people were putting the premium fruit through as the cheaper fruit.
As the cheap fruit.
So what we did is we changed the defaults. Mm-hmm. And so we put the more expensive one in the place that people would automatically click. And then he thought that was quite great. And I'm kind of the mind that if you catch someone kind of shoplifting in these major things, it's your duty to kind of let them get away with it. They probably need it. It's fine.
That's right.
And I just today, I was saying to Kim, it's my moment of pride. I got two bananas, and they were the fancy bananas because the other ones were a bit too green. That's right. But I put them on the scales. I had like barcodes on, but I put them on the scales strategically so the barcodes wouldn't get scanned.
This is good.
It saved about, I don't know, 70 cents.
75 cents.
Yeah.
Fuckers.
Yeah, that's right.
And also, where's all your eggs? Get your eggs back in.
That's right. Yeah.
Fizz, you know what, man? I'm having such a fantastic time with you, but it's time for us to pop the top off a little showstopper.
Oh, yeah. All right, I've already glugged mine.
Okay, now I'm not going to be able to get the sound as good as you did last time, but here it comes.
Oh, that was great. What do you mean?
Nowhere near as good as yours.
No, it was awesome. I was expecting it. You know when people pop champagne? We got champagne, like proper champagne connoisseurs. Shout out, Jen and Dukes.
Yes.
They'll say that like the thing with the champagne is you don't want to shake it up. You don't want to kind of do this big pop.
Yes.
It needs to be like just someone that's lifting their cheek to do a like little
little on the tram.
Yeah.
Stealth number.
That's right. So, you know.
Do to me. It's a dream of mine to drink champagne with your champagne connoisseur buddies.
Oh, yeah. They are right into it. Yeah, one day. Maybe we'll have them on the show one day.
Good call.
I keep talking about this show. That's going to have all these international guests.
We will. Now, legend, what have I cracked? So this is Lark, and I know that you and I are big fans of Tassie whiskey. This is the Seppelsfield Tawny Port, and I got this one through the Whiskey Club, who I left briefly and rejoined recently. And my God, they're a good club, man. And you know, since I bounced out, their buying power has swollen as the membership increases. And so you're getting some brilliant whiskies at a really reasonable price point. It sounds like a...
That's cool. Maybe they'll sponsor us.
I didn't actually mean to do that. Okay. Are you noticing, Biz?
Sure I am.
Oh, man. Port cask, I always get caramel. They're always, you know, you often get these references to things like fig. Fig is definitely there for me.
Yeah, like dried fig. And the caramel's like, it's not necessarily burnt caramel. It's more on the...
Jersey.
Runny side. Yeah, yeah, caramel jersey. Yeah.
Okay, we sipping last time. I remember you just threw the trapdoor back.
A little bit of vanilla. I'm going to do my little saliva.
My little hungry hippo. Raisins. Biz, are we getting raisins there?
Yeah, just my first sip, but yeah, definitely. I put a note on the little post that I sent out to folks with this. It's like, if you want to join us, here's the whiskey we had. And so love the thought that this is not a permanent state, but they're in a point in life where they're maybe feeling a little bit lonely, but they've read the note, they've got the whiskey, they're listening to the podcast, and they're joining us right now.
Genius. That's such a good idea, mate. That's such a good idea. I had a lovely little moment there. I went all the way back to being a little kid in the playground and in my lunchbox having a little box of those raisins, and I don't remember them.
Oh yeah,
little cartoon raisins.
Yeah,
it was a real, real little time traveler.
I haven't had one of these in like 2 decades, but like a Mars bar moment almost.
Well, that's where you are with that Jersey caramel.
You go
Jersey caramel and maybe Mars bar on the finish because it's getting a little bit more cocoa.
Mm.
This one is staying longer than the one we had last week. On the finish, lots of honey on either side of the tongue on the way.
Yeah, so good. There's this kind of like, I don't know. It's like, you know, when you snap a branch and immediately there's this aroma thing. It's like that, but the kind of taste experience and the finish. I can't quite put it into words, but like freshly snapped wood, not even green wood. It's not even old, like snapped wood.
Snapped wood. I like that. And I like that you're saying freshly snapped. It's that sort of it's a moment.
Yeah, I think just freshly after the snap, the wood is normal age. It's like, this is what I love when it comes to smoky whiskies or even the sweet things. There's so many different types of smoke, you know. And sometimes it's like a little kind of campfire by the ocean and stuff like that. We're not on smokies today, but like this is so good. Normally I'm not like so keen on super heavy Christmassy flavors, but this one's got good raisin vibes and that kind of caramel anyway. Well, this is fun for the listener.
But we made that point last week, you know, there is going to be a pause of sniffing and slurping, and that's kind of that's part of something that happens. It's interesting though, so you don't like your Christmas cake sort of marmalade sherry bombs?
So what specifically it might be, I don't like heavy-handed Christmas stuff, and it might be because Christmas was always like a sort of traumatic's too heavy a word, but it was a troubled time for me because growing up between two different parents, I'd have to choose which family I was with, and just like Christmas cake and all of that. Also struggling parents at the time, a stressful time, and it just evokes like a lot of stuff from that time. You know,
it makes a lot of sense, brother. You know, I was reading about that just last year that one of the reasons why scent returns a memory in a way that's so visceral is because that part of your mind that's really close to your olfactory system, you know, it's going straight into where your emotions are generated. So that's why you sniff something, you don't just remember, you feel what that was. It's time travel. And so I can see how whiskey would do that. It's not necessarily a connotation that you chase after. That makes sense, Holmes.
Well, that's I love marmalade. Marmalade flavors, great. Raisins, great. And things. It's just this kind of spiced fruit cake. If it's heavy spiced fruit cake vibe, I'm like...
The pudding thing. You're not about that pud.
Not about the pud. Not about the pud. I don't mind a bit of sticky pud, if you know what I mean.
Actually, this does have sticky date pud flavors.
It does have,
Yeah, I'll take that. I was going to say, I'm glad you mentioned smoke. We haven't gone there, right? I don't know if we can go straight into kind of Octomore town, but I think we should start thinking about bringing some Petey boys in as this thing unfolds. And you gave me a great idea as well. When you spoke about your lovely friends who are experts about champagne, you know, let's be very clear in saying that as we evolve and when we start bringing guests, this isn't about pounding whiskey. You can bring anything you want. You might have it. You might want to show us a bloody boost juice. Okay, we're not stuck in this mode. But this is obviously something that you and I are pretty bent on.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, we can get a few done before we get to boost juice.
I'm doing all these ads. Actually, Fizzle, it's time for a fake ad. And let's remember, this time, the fake ad is yours. Let me set it up.
Why convert with the machine learning model when you can consort with something far older, stranger, and more fabulous? At Glamoury.co, we offer authentic, fey-crafted enchantments to elevate your professional presence, especially if your credentials are more fiction than fact. We've helped clients turn humble side projects into thought leadership initiatives, crop TEDx logos just enough to let people assume it wasn't the main stage, and conjure testimonials from ephemeral sources, just initials, maybe a first name, probably real. And our piece de la résistance is transmuting middling work history into compelling narrative arcs, using thesaurus-grade spellwork and a pinch of simmering half-truth. Here at Glamoury Co., we don't fake it till you make it. We help you make it by faking it. Because, darling, face validity is all you need. So if your LinkedIn profile feels a little banal, a little too mortal, let us help you with some Glamoury. Put the super in superficial. Visit glamoury.co today and mention Kindred Spirits, all one word, or lowercase,
for $10 off your first incantation. Glamoury.co. Professionally enchanted, ethically ambiguous.
Oh, I wish I knew what I was saying for this fake head, but I don't yet. But it'll be great, I'm sure.
But by now it will have been said.
Okay? Oh yes, true. Well done, me. How good is that fake head?
Excellent. This is the magic of post production. So Fizzle, have you got any bad advice, mate? I think I went first last time, but I'd love to get some from you.
Okay. You need to be extremely disciplined with the content that you put out. Like, set a date that you're going to post shit and post it no matter what. Like, ignore your feelings. Just get it out there. We're in an attention economy, okay? It's if you're not top of mind, you are withering in obscurity. So get out there.
Get out there quickly. This is good. So before uploading a video, be crystal on one question. Who's buying? Okay? Who's paying? How much money do they have? And who's got more of the money? And once you've laser beamed on where that fat stash is, that's who you're making the video for. It's for them to loosen the purse strings to amplify your next maneuver.
That's right. Hey, look, no. On the other hand, though, Rick Rubin says you don't need to care about anyone. If your collection of toenail clippings from celebrities is what your thought leadership is about, then you do you, okay?
The art is about what you generate by you and for you. It doesn't care whether other people care about it. You know, actually, this is a sidebar, but I remember saying once in a really low mode to one of my producers, what is me writing a song? Is this kind of like me yakking in the corner and then pointing to my own spew and trying to get other people to care about it? Is that what this is? Well, Rick Rubin says that doesn't matter. Just yak and point to it and be proud of it.
Be sure to periodically delete all of your past work. If it gives you even just the hint of cringe, banish it. You don't want people coming across that, lest past they years. Discover that you learn and grow and develop as a person. You need to be a fixed model of perfection.
That's perfect. You don't ever let anyone think that you're not perfectly crystallized now.
That's right.
Delete any film or version of you that gives you the ick. Fantastic, Grizzle.
The ick.
Gracious.
Oh, good. All right, let's reflect.
I had an absolute blast. Well, I do want to say that I've had an absolute blast with you, as predicted, my friend. Thank you again for your energy and your essence, Fizzle.
And, you know, just in case it doesn't make it in the kind of the preamble that we did, I'm just like, I'm so happy for you with Luna coming onto the scene and, you know, this, like, yeah, just all four of you. It's like, and just, I'm glad that we did this today. I was feeling a bit flat beforehand, and you really also, I kind of quite genuinely share, you know, stuff that I'm grappling with. And it's so nice to have a friend to kind of dance with that energy and yeah, it just took me into some, it took me into a good place and reminded me of some things that I'd forgotten.
Thank you, brother. And that's one thing, you know, one thing that really jumped, and I'm devastated that I lost it because I wrote it down, but you had this idea about being a living poem. Would you mind bringing that back for me, Fizz? What did you say about being a living poem?
I think this amalgamates Bill Plotkin and maybe David White's sensibilities, but there's a sense of the ecological niche, and we're ecological expressions on a journey to find our ecological niche, and part of that means sensing and living into the poem we are born to be.
That's so good, mate. And so that's my final reflection, is that if that idea appeals to you and you want to sense and live into the poem that you were born to be, then only you know how to create a reality for yourself that sees what is in your head and your heart come through in your behavior. If you can, the harder you can work on aligning those things, I honestly think that you're bringing yourself to the very precipice of utopia.
Beautifully said.
Always a pleasure.
I can't top that. Wow.
Always a pleasure with you, you fantastic spirit.
Likewise, mate. my kindred spirit, and thank you to all that are listening here. It's this is episode 2 of the Kindred Spirits. This is a new little thing that we're doing here, but this feels so good. So if you're enjoying this, please hit us up at some point. I mean, look, Jay has just had a new baby burst into the scene. At some point, he's going to have a newsletter or something like that. Yes. But in the meantime, like, connect with us, say hello, don't be strangers, and look forward to having you join us in the next episode.
Thanks so much. See you, friends.